listening. This is Sinead, and you're listening to Firestarter Radio Wildcard on Renegade Broadcasting. So tonight I was going to share with you for the first hour a talk that I did with my friend Massimo, but unfortunately my stupid program that I have used forever, it's called Piezo, and I freaking paid for it again today to put on my new computer, it only recorded my voice, so totally defeated the purpose of doing an interview with someone. Really bummed, but I guess maybe it's just a sign from the gods that that was our warm-up, and next time we get together for a chat, we will be even more on fire. So sorry about that, Massimo. I know you're out there maybe listening, so apologies. I don't know what to say. I blame technology. It totally wasn't anything I did wrong. I'm perfect. So what I am going to share with you guys tonight, because I did, you know, say I would do this slot tonight and I don't want to leave it open. I try to stick to my word when I can, but I want to share some recordings with you guys. I hope I can make it to 2 hours. I also have some sound clips and stuff that I wanted to play. I really appreciate all your support. I want to tell you guys about some websites that I built recently. Thank you to the few people that sent me a couple bucks. You know, I put the donations to good use. I really don't go out and like go shopping for myself. Or I mean, I'm wearing clothes that I had in eighth grade. You know, I have holes in my freaking clothes. It's pretty bad. But when I get funds, I want to put it into doing something creative, not just going and spending it on like crap. Although I could use like a new pair of jeans. But anyways, I have built 3 websites. I am finally getting the hang of it. WordPress makes it really easy. So we have Renegade Vids, V-I-D-S, like videos, renegadevids.com. And that is where we are going to be hosting our videos from now on because we cannot stay up on YouTube, like at all. So we have most of our videos back up there that have been taken down. We will get more up and more. And we'll get new material as well up for you guys there. So please go check it out and spread the word. Also, we are going... I'm going to introduce apocalypse.com. I'm still working on that one. It's in its infancy. I also would like to do a promo video for Apocalypse. If anybody wants to help me with that, like write a script or something, it would really help me. Because I can whip something up editing-wise and, you know, just record my voice real quick, but it's the writing the script process and just I just don't have time to even think about that. So if you could please help me, anybody, send me a script for, you know, what you think would be a good Apocalypse promo video and I'll make it come to life. So we have apocalypse.com, which is going to be developing more as a site. It's just pretty basic right now. Because I wanted to have the domain name so that, you know, we have control over the public image of this event. Now, I also have beyondpizzagate.com, and if you want to check it out, the trailer that was removed from all my channels is back up. You can view it on that website. The part one, the first part of the documentary, should be ready. All things going well, it should be ready February 14th, so that's very soon. And we will be posting part one, which is going to be about an hour. We will be posting that on beyondpizzagate.com. So the first part is just going to go over the whole Pizzagate issue, connections, new discoveries, and we're going to, in subsequent editions, we're going to be tying it all together to a much bigger picture. And we already did that in the first part because just this whole pizza meme is not isolated to Pizzagate and Washington, D.C., and Comet Pizza. I mean, this is big. This is really big. So please check that out. And then we will, as soon as we get that released, we'll start on, you know, the next parts. Also, I'm going to be hosting a speakers event. I'm sure it's going to be very small. But if you're able to get up to Lake Mary, Florida, we're going to be having a speakers event for the Sidelanders. They are those South Africans that I spoke with a while ago. The interview is obviously now gone because my channels have been taken down and I don't have a copy of it. But they are a group that is trying to raise funds and gain supplies for white South Africans for what they predict is the coming civil war. So they're going to be arriving in the United States. Actually, they'll be flying into Orlando. So this is going to be their first stop. And then they're going all over the country. So if you guys are available March 5th at 7 p.m. Eastern, we will be there, and they have already secured the venue. They have a whole speech planned. I am going to record it. I was going to live stream it, but I think there's no point in doing that because I don't even have a following on YouTube anymore because I get deleted all the time. And live streaming quality sucks really bad. So I think we'll just do, you know, a recording. And if there's anybody out there that wants to, you know, help us out by sending some lapel mics that are better than the ones we have, because the ones we have suck. That way I can get some good sound for the recording and you guys can actually hear what they have to say. You know, feel free to let me know if you want to send me some lapel mics. I could use it. And we will obviously make that into a video to upload and share around. So I really hope some of you can make it. I know I've talked to some people in Miami. I know we have people in Tampa. You know, even if you're up in Georgia or somewhere else, if you want to make the trip down, you know, for a good cause, it would just, you know, it'd be nice to have the room somewhat full, more than just, you know, a couple of us. I know those guys would really appreciate it. And, you know, you can go back with a lot of knowledge about what they've been experiencing, and you can say that you went and supported your people. So get in touch with me if you would like to be part of that. There's no entry fee or anything. You just show up and, you know, we'll probably go out for dinner or something afterwards. So that's it for housekeeping stuff. I'm going to get to the recordings now. Thank you, everybody, for your support. Please check out renegadevids.com, beyondpizzagate.com, and apocalypse.com. And I will talk with you all soon. I hope to get some freaking notification about whether I can take this test or not. I've gotten nothing except, oh, you forgot to send this, so I sent it in. So I'm kind of at this point assuming that I'm not going to be able to take it till June. So I'm kind of checked out at this point. And if that's the case, if I get validation, then I'm going to be back to doing shows maybe even sooner than March. But who knows? We'll see. I miss doing them. I just don't have the time right now. So, thanks again, everybody, and enjoy the show. All right, so someone just sent me an interesting article by Tim Wheeler about Dave Duke and his connections to intelligence. So let's read it. David Duke, it is said, idolized his father, an engineer for Shell Oil Company, who, like his son, was a white supremacist. This is obviously their words, not mine. The father, David Hedger Duke, volunteered for service in Southeast Asia during the Vietnam War. He was sent to Laos as an agent of the U.S. State Department's Agency for International Development. Young David, meanwhile, completed high school and enrolled at Louisiana State University, where he became notorious on Free Speech Alley for his racist and anti-Semitic harangues. Just before he dropped out of LSU on March 4th, 1971, Duke was ordered to report for active duty. Selective service records show that he was classified 1A, but it is a highly unusual move, reports Tyler Bridges of the Times-Picayune of New Orleans. Duke was given a student deferment March 18th, even though he soon left school and didn't return for 18 months. None of the members of his draft board contacted said they knew why the injunction notice was rescinded. When Bridges asked Duke why he hadn't been drafted, Duke responded, "Well, I was in Laos during the war." And indeed he was. He boasted that he spent 9 months in Laos beginning in May 1971, flying 20 missions, quote, behind enemy lines aboard CIA Air America transport planes, dropping supplies to CIA mercenary troops in the mountains. In attempting to debunk details of Duke's story, critics only confirm the main point. Charles Green, for example, head of the Agency for International Development Language School in Laos, said Duke served only 6 weeks as an English language instructor of Laotian army officers. Green claims he fired Duke when he walked into his classroom and saw that Duke had drawn a Molotov cocktail on the blackboard. It is well known that the CIA used USAID as a cover for covert warfare in Southeast Asia. It is entirely plausible that David Duke was recruited as a covert agent of the CIA. That would explain why his induction into the military was mysteriously rescinded. It would also explain Duke's strange immunity in other criminal and terrorist activities. In September 1976, Duke was the sponsor of a conference of neo-Nazis and Klansmen at a hotel near his home in Metairie, an all-white suburb of New Orleans. I probably butchered that, sorry. When police arrived, Duke and his followers surrounded the squad car. Duke led the mob in chanting, "White Power!" Duke screamed at the officers, "You are a Jew, you work for the FBI, they are commie traitors, and you are too." The police radioed for help, and Duke was among those arrested. He was tried but received a suspense sentence. Why? On December 31, 1980, Duke sat on a French Quarter balcony in New Orleans with a convicted felon named Michael Perdue. According to Guel Udell, a close friend of Duke's who was there, the two men hashed over Perdue's plan to invade the Caribbean island of Dominica. A small band of mercenaries would sail to the tiny black-populated country, overthrow the government, and set up a white supremacist junta. Reports the Times-Picayune Perdue, quote, "dreamed of making millions by running a casino and exporting lumber," end quote. Others say the real export was to be cocaine and other narcotics. Duke reportedly helped Perdue find a charter boat to transport his mercenary commandos and put Perdue in touch with people who would finance the bizarre expedition, codenamed Operation Red Dog. On April 27, 1981, officers of the Federal Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms arrested them just before they had boarded the yacht in a lake Pontchartrain. Okay. Despite his ringleader role, Duke was not arrested. He was not subpoenaed to appear before a grand jury, where he placed the Fifth Amendment, refusing to testify. 9 of the 10 other conspirators, including Duke's cohort, Klansman Don Black, were found guilty and served time in prison. Why was Duke let off?
So, something interesting that someone sent me, a Brian Jew video, Brian Rue. I guess apparently he has been in and out of psych wards for, I don't know, some time now. And his bipolar crap has been documented, I guess, from day one. He's been doing videos about how he's bipolar and blah, blah, blah. And, man, I wish I had looked more into his stuff before I went on his show. But, I mean, it's impossible to keep track of all these shills. I mean, there's just so many. And us people that don't get paid for doing the renegade work, you know, us people that have to work regular jobs and have to, you know, clean our own houses and everything, we don't have time to look into every single frickin' shill. Or people that are, you know, most of them are shills, but people that are pro-white thought leaders, meh. So, yeah, he says in this video that he was held there and, now he's back and blah, blah, blah. But I was just looking at some pictures of him. He is such a Jew. Like, there's another kind of Jew nose, and thanks to Massimo for pointing this out. Okay, there's obviously the six, right? And then, like, the hook going down, and then there's, like, this bubble nose, like Brian Rue has. He looks like a friggin' dinosaur. Like some kind of weird reptilian creature. Seriously, like, what and he shared, I wish I had grabbed it, maybe I did, but he had put up that cringeworthy video of, like, Hitler reborn, you know, he was having his delusions of grandeur, right? That's the official narrative they're giving us. And he was like, "I was just a Catholic, little Catholic boy," and it looked like the people in the whole movie had, like, blonde hair, and I really doubt that's Brian Rue as a child. Call me crazy. But, yeah, and his associations with Fromm. There's a huge, like, the whole Canadian thing now, I don't trust one of them. These Canadian National Socialists. Brian Rue's married to a frickin' Asian. Others have gone off the deep end. We have James Sears, the frickin', pickup artist. I don't know, you guys, there's a major operation in Canada, obviously everywhere, but I mean, it's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous. They're all pro-Trump, too, like Alfred Schaefer, even though he's not Canadian. I mean, he goes out of his way to shill for Trump. It's very strange. It's very strange. Like, why would you feel the need to try and convince me so hard? You know? It's very odd. I don't even feel the need to that, like, to go after convincing people not to like him. You know, I usually just want to cut them out of my life because they're retarded. And I'm not going to sit there and argue with people. And that's what a lot of these people get mad at me for, because I block them or take them off my Skype contacts because I just don't have time to talk to them. And I don't know, they expect me to be their friggin' therapist or something. Send me, like, paragraphs of stuff, and then they get mad when I don't write back right away. Why aren't you answering my question? Like, go away, get another hobby. I'm not saying for people that send me messages on Skype not to do it, you know, obviously. You know who you are, the ones that I respond to. But man, some people I just have to cut out because, like, they send me things over and over and over and over and over again. I'm like, okay, you're not the only one doing this. It's like 50 other people doing this, and I just feel a little crazy. Feeling a little crazy with all of this stuff going on. I don't know. I feel like I have like all these juggling pins in the air, and I'm trying to juggle and like on a unicycle at the same time. It's what I feel like my life is. But yeah, I don't take this whole story with Brian Juru being, you know, oh, poor Brian, Meanie Sinead is attacking poor Brian, who sat there on a call on a Skype with it looked like a Hasidic woman, but with a Jewish woman. It was admitted between both of them that she was Jewish. And to me, she looked Hasidic because she had what appeared to be a wig. They all wear wigs after they're married. And she had the Hasidic dress on. I know what kind of clothes they have to wear. And it was like, you know, long sleeve up to her neck. And that's, she looked like all of the yentas I saw in Brooklyn when I was living there. So yeah, no one actually has any kind of critical thinking because, again, they're caught in the ellipse if they're not just totally shilling for him and part of the whole operation. But they're caught in the ellipse because Brian Roux said some good things. Brian Roux said things that were true, though. He said that Hitler wasn't evil, so what if he loves Jews? I mean, see, you guys are defending him. Not people listening, but a lot of people out there are defending him because you've been tricked again, and you don't want to admit, or you don't want to come to the realization that you've been tricked again, and that this guy's a snake. So you dissociate, and you say, well, I mean, most of the stuff he says is good, right? Yeah. So whatever, like, it's fine if he had that little slip up and said he was in love with a Jew, but man, it's like, can you imagine if I did something like that? I mean, they already called me bipolar, you know, crazy, psychotic. But can you imagine if I seriously pulled a stunt like that? Do you think people would be coming to my defense like, oh, poor Sinead? No. They'd be like, ha, ah, I hope she dies, stupid bitch. Okay, now to thoroughly trigger you guys, I'm going to play a clip from this woman's YouTube channel I've been watching. And I really like it so far. I haven't really watched all of her videos. I don't know if I necessarily agree with her on everything. I think she likes Ayn Rand. But she makes some pretty funny videos. And, she's a flat earther. So she must be, like, totally retarded. So we're going to listen to a video where she talks about going to the library and getting books on satellites. But for some reason, there's not one picture of a satellite in the book about satellites. Weird. You'd think with all the hundreds of them that are supposedly up there, not running into each other, orbiting around with the ISS, and not burning up in the thermosphere either, which is, it's extremely hot and nothing can exist up there without burning to bits. But, you know, I'm just a crazy, crazy conspiracy person here. So Daphne's going to tell you a little bit about her trip to the library, and I'm not like endorsing this YouTuber yet because I don't have time to actually look into all their views and everything, but I found this video funny and I wanted to share it with you guys. So this is
Hey, I'm Daphne and welcome back to part 19 of my personal flat earth experience. And my experience included, for you, no doubt, going to the library and checking out over 30 different books. These are some of them that are included in that that number. And these are children's books that I went through, and I thought I would go through them and explain to you what I found in them that was interesting, and that was fucking nothing. The only thing I found that was even slightly interesting was the fact that these books don't have any pictures of satellites or any pictures of real space. I went through all of them. And in fact, this book entitled Satellites doesn't even have a picture of a satellite in it. It does, however, have this snazzy little drawing. Oh, how irritating. And I wanted to show you what I found. I found the only picture of a satellite that existed in any of these books or any of the others, and it's still hilarious. I've been waiting on maybe like a picture from, you know, from the ground of their satellite, you know, something that they took after they made it. I expected that with all kind of different satellites that they say exist, and I can't find any of them. But they say that this here is Ulysses. And what's really funny is that, I showed this to my husband, and I was like, what do you see here that's really interesting? And he said first thing was, these little poles here, like, and this foil. Am I really expected to believe that that is going to hold up in space? I don't know. I think they're also, you know, like, insulting my intelligence when they go there. So I just wanted to tell you that I went through these books, and the only thing of any value or any interest I found was that it left me with this conspiracy on my palate, which is these books have just enough information in them to get a child interested in space exploration, just interested enough so that he will pay his taxes and watch movies and believe them and maybe admire astronauts from afar, but not enough information to make becoming an astronaut a viable fucking career option, because as we know, it isn't.
Okay, so I was just talking to a public school teacher here, and she was telling me how in classrooms now, these are general education classrooms, not just special ed classrooms, or gifted, as they say. They are using clickers on these, like, clicker training. I don't know if you guys are familiar with what clicker training is, but it's used for animal training. Okay, so it's basically, you know, you pair something with the click. So, for example, you would click the clicker at the same time as reinforcement. So it's basically, you pair the reinforcement with the sound of the click, and then hopefully you can take away the primary reinforcer and replace it with the click, and the animal will still do the same behavior. So they're using these with children in school. They're like, they have these clickers in the classroom. This is really disturbing. This is really, really disturbing to me. I don't even think that's ethical or legal, because I think technically it would be an intervention, and I believe parents would have to sign off on that. I mean, not that schools can pretty much do whatever they want, but I mean, there are still some laws that sort of protect these children and what they can and cannot do with them in these schools. And also, some of the special education classrooms, they are regressing them a lot. Obviously, special education is going to be regressed already. But I've met children who were, they had to repeat fifth grade, but they were able to do, you know, double digits subtraction and addition with regrouping, and were able to do fifth grade vocabulary, spelling words, reading comprehension, all of this. And now they're putting them on a kindergarten curriculum. Kindergarten. Okay? This kid came back the other day with his homework. He's in fifth grade, and he might not be able to talk, but he's not retarded. He can spell, and he can do math, and, you know, he's not actually retarded. His IQ is not that of a retarded person. So now, instead of, you know, obviously these people will never live up to their full potential, but they're just regressing them on purpose even more. And of course, this is happening to the general education students as well. But it was pretty remarkable to see them go from a fifth grade curriculum to a kindergarten curriculum. And now I understand that a lot of people think, like, why should we put any resources into these children that are autistic or have learning disabilities or this or that?
Well, I do think the system is definitely set up the wrong way. We put way too many resources into, those that have developmental issues than we do into those that don't. But this won't change until our system changes, because obviously we live in a dysgenic society that wants to bring down the best and brightest. Just learning that they were using the kindergarten curriculum, it just was a big eye-opener for me of just how fast they're really tearing apart just any kind of learning. I mean, just any basic learning. They want these people so dumb that they can't even spell their names. It's really scary. They're also not teaching cursive anymore, you guys. And I brought it up tonight around some people, like work people, and they just thought, who cares? They don't need to sign their name. They're gonna be pressing a button with their fingerprint or swiping a chip or something. And they all thought it was so cool. I'm like, yeah. And then I said, well, they won't be able to read the Constitution, will they? And this girl's like, who cares? I can go Google it right now. I'm like, yeah, do you think they're going to maybe change some of that? Maybe Photoshop it a little bit? Not that the Constitution even matters anymore, because, I mean, did it ever? I don't know. Were the Founding Fathers actually, like, legit? I don't think so. Not a lot of them. I don't know. I still need to look back into the past of this country more. I don't know enough, but, yeah. They, and with cursive, it activates both hemispheres of the brain. With print, it's very concrete and linear, and it's only activating one side of the brain. So I think it's definitely on purpose that these children are not being taught cursive. Also, cursive helps children to develop better penmanship, and it's just prettier. It's just nicer. So, very, very scary that this isn't being taught. And I don't know if you guys have seen this Common Core math, but math already makes my brain hurt. I mean, obviously not a simple, 2 + 2 or simple multiplication equation or something, but I'm talking, algebra, calculus, all that. Ugh, get it away from me. However, when I look at this math work that would be seemingly very simple, 12 plus 10 or something, you just go down your columns, add them up. If you need to regroup because there's a 10, you carry the number and blah, blah, blah. But no, now they're having them, I don't even understand what they're doing. I can't even explain it to you guys. It's like they break down, they go through about 10 steps, 10 pointless, confusing, and utterly a waste of time steps to get to the same answer that you could have gotten to with a fraction of the time. I've seen children come home and just cry their eyes out because they can't do this math. Their parents can't help them with the homework. And the teachers are, I know teachers that are just refusing to teach this. So I'm happy to hear that. there's only so much they can do though, because these teachers aren't even able to really teach anymore. It's just all teaching to the test, go to the standardized, your state standardized test that everybody has to pass. And the teacher has to basically teach for that assessment all year round. And it's scary. It's scary too, like the lack of teaching that even goes on with these teachers. I was helping a kid tonight with homework and the teacher didn't even spell the spelling word right. And she's like she's my age, young white woman. I met her. That's really sad. I can't imagine being in her shoes, though, having to teach in that kind of environment either, so I can understand why she's, like, checked out. Oh, man. And then the teacher I was talking to said that there's a fifth grader there who one of the teachers has been requesting for months and months and months to get her out of her room. He's not only been physically violent with the teacher, but he threatened to rape a fifth grade girl. She said, he's been bullying her and harassing her, and she said, leave me alone. And he said, I forget the beginning part, but it was like, you better watch out because I'm going to stick this black dick up your ass. Or this big dick up your ass or something. And, that's coming out of a fifth grader. And he heard that at home or on the street. He didn't just get that through osmosis or something. I guess that would be osmosis. didn't pop into his head one day. He heard that. He heard that in the music that his little nigglet friends listened to. His little thuglet friends. He learned that in the disgusting street culture where the blacks keep each other down. You can ask any black that's gotten out of the ghetto. They've had to completely change their name so their family doesn't find them, because their family hates when one of them rise up. They hate it because they want to keep them down. It's sad. I mean, all some of these little thuggies, all they'll ever know is a 1 mile radius. I mean, they live in Florida and they've never even been to the beach. I mean, these are paycheck children. And we have our white trash that has those paycheck children as well, and it makes me sick. I hear the stories all the time. They're just a paycheck. And now all of these parents want to get their child diagnosed with ADD because ADD gets you Social Security now. Oh, yeah. So what? Like every child ever can get Social Security, I guess? It's sick. It's sick. These parents will go to the teachers or the doctors. They're like, I heard that if you get an autistic diagnosis that you get more money. So my son's autistic. He's a good artist. It's like, no, we're not saying artistic. Autistic. It means brain damaged. And you should not want any child to have brain damage, even if it pays you. Very sad. So now all these, I mean, and rightly so a lot of times, because their children are delayed and they are presenting as having something wrong with them. So a lot of these parents are just going in droves to the neurologist, to the psychologist, and they want a diagnosis for their child because they get money and services. And now Medicaid is doing all kinds of changes. I don't know if it's because Trump's in office now or just because it's Medicaid and they change stuff all the time. But now these services are going to be available to pretty much like any child that just has maladaptive, behaviors, or they're not doing the things that society and parents and everybody else wants them to do. So it's just we're entering, communism. I mean, we've already been in it, but like this is totally communism. I mean, this is insane. Clicker training children in school, commie core, and everybody getting like all these therapies and services for just being normal children most of the time. It's really crazy. I mean, parents are having to get all these like specialists and people to come in and help potty train their children. What happened to just being a parent and having those things come instinctively? I mean, I would never dream in a million years to call up some expert to come like help me. I mean, I guess the only thing I would ever do is maybe a lactation consultant if I was having trouble breastfeeding. But when I had trouble breastfeeding, I couldn't afford a lactation consultant. But there are free groups you can go to, like La Leche League. Although La Leche League allowed a tranny or it had chopped off its breasts and like had a beard and stuff, but was still able to get pregnant. I don't know how that worked. Like how a former woman, I guess still technically a woman by their genitalia, would be able to take all those hormones to grow a beard and, become all manly, but then still be able to conceive. I don't understand that. And have like a conceive and have a full term pregnancy. That doesn't make any sense to me, because wouldn't the hormones screw it up? I mean, I know if your hormones aren't balanced, you're infertile usually. So I don't, it makes me sick that there are women that are trying so hard to get pregnant and just want a baby. And we have sick freaks like that can get pregnant no problem. I mean, it just makes me throw my hands up in the air. Or we have women that just want a baby so badly and some stupid skank is just killing hers because she wants to go out and have more fun. Do more drugs and have more meaningless sex with random strangers. The Aryan way. It truly is, right? Yeah. Okay, well, I'm almost home, and I don't really have too much more to talk about. I kind of want to leave this all here outside of my home so I don't bring it in, because I'm just really disgusted. As usual, there's no shortage of things to be disgusted about. So, that's it. Drove by a church and I didn't have time to like take a picture because I'm not gonna risk my life, slowing down, possibly getting rear-ended here. But okay, it was a church daycare, so even creepier. It said, the only way to reach the stars is on your knees. What? That's disgusting. Even if you take out the pederasty kind of vibes, why does anybody have to get on their knees to reach the stars, you know? Like, it's just disgusting. Ugh, yeah, Christianity is so healthy for us, guys. It's great. So empowering. Get on your knees, Goyim. I mean, Christians. Children of God. Lamb of God. You take away the sins of the world. Ugh, so stupid.
Okay, so I just want to read an excerpt from Matt Heimbachstein article, because I guess apparently there are still listeners of my show who think this guy isn't a Jew. Even after seeing all the connections between him and Dugin, and him looking like a Jew, him acting like a Jew, his former girlfriend, Ashley Ray Goldenberg, you know, it's just ridiculous. So, okay, he says here, National Socialism from the very beginning had no qualms about betraying the right-wing parties in Germany and was openly hostile to the church.
Oh, no.
While Hitler made passing remarks supporting Christianity, it is clear when one looks at his writings and words that his goal was to replace worship of God with a worship of the Aryan, he puts that in quotes, Aryan people and of himself. The right-wing and monarchists thought they could work with the Nazis to achieve a bulwark against the communists. Just as the modern pro-white movement seems to have made a silent alliance with National Socialists, we somehow are unable to look at the example of the past to know what happens to those who deal with monsters.
What?
I thought you were National Socialist. But I guess National Socialists are monsters. So what are you then? Well, you're a kike, I know that, but okay. When the Nazis seized power, they imprisoned, harassed, and killed their former allies. The people of Germany were betrayed by the rhetoric of the National Socialists, only to be dragged into a fratricidal war and shameful behaviors that embarrass the white race to this day. As the true warriors of the fatherland bearing belt buckles that bore the eternal phrase Gott mit uns marched off to face down the international Bolsheviks, the scheming Nazi leadership and thuggish supporters sent them off to their deaths. The true colors of the Nazis were shown by satanic pagan rituals. Ooh! Abuses of human rights, oppression of the church, and the willingness to sacrifice Christian patriots by the millions to achieve their goals. What? No mention of Jews here. Just about how evil and... it is now. Okay. Back to Matt Heimbachstein. How can a group say they want the best for the white race when they treat our Slavic brothers no better than animals, bomb and murder innocent white women and children in the cities of Europe, and then betray the very people who fought and died for them by ordering the destruction of food and basic supplies to punish the German people for not winning the Nazis' two-front war? I commend and honor men like Anton Schmid, Klaus von Stauffenberg, and the 77,000 men and women who were murdered by the Nazis for resisting the regime. What? Okay. Most of the German population was duped into supporting the Nazis and realized too late that what their true intentions were. We as a movement cannot make the same mistake twice in thinking that the pagan Nazis can be negotiated or partnered with. Good, dude, because we don't want to partner with frickin' Jews. Fat, disgusting Jews. He's most likely a homo. I'm sorry. That voice sounds very homo to me. I don't care if he got some woman pregnant. Like, he probably still gets it in the butt. From Alexander Dugin. It's bashy. All right. The strong stance against communism, opposition to international banking, and a strong folk identity all seem to be very positive things. But we cannot be deceived as the German people were, for beneath these few agreed-upon notions, the National Socialists are wolves in sheep's clothing. Ooh, I would rather die next to the heroic men of the July 20th plot than ever raise my right arm to Adolf Hitler. I myself sometimes forget to make the differentiation between the Germans of the Second World War and the Nazis. Fighting the Soviet Union and attempting to defend Germany is heroic, and it is hard not to be moved by old war footage of Wehrmacht soldiers at the front, or likable generals like Rommel and his Afrika Korps racing through North Africa, sparring with Patton. The masculine image of the German folk during World War II is something that inspires many, and it is many pro-white advocates end up buying into, at least giving the Nazis a seat at the table. The men of the 21st century pro-white movement who admire Germany during this period, however, are not supporting the Nazis. What? Okay. While they may have been forced at gunpoint to serve under the swastika, I have almost always found that the movement respects soldiers who fought with honor, courage, and chivalry, not murderous thugs like the Gestapo. We must entirely and unquestionably denounce National Socialism and promptly remove all of their influence from our movement. If the pro-white movement wants to honor Germans from the Second World War, they should focus on the Germans who fought honorably for their fatherland, not those who betrayed it like Adolf Hitler and his clowns Himmler and Goering. All right, so now this is Ray Goldenberg, his ex-girlfriend, blog, or from her Tumblr, Communism Kills. From part of 2011 until August 2012, I used to see Matt Heimbach. We met because he was holding a huge Israeli flag on a sign that had a bunch of Tea Party slogans on it about joining youth for Western civilization on my campus. While the group never formed, we hung out a few times. There wasn't really anything more than a hand-holding sometimes. He had a girlfriend. I really didn't like the idea of a relationship. Every now and then he'd ask me, "What are we?" And I would be able to live off his $30,000 a year salary. Huh, really? I thought he was living in a trailer and couldn't pay his phone bill. I don't know. I know he got fired from his job, but I highly doubt that this guy's not getting funding, okay? With his freaking Chaos Star and his worship of Alexander Duke. Guys, this guy's an agent, and he's a Jew. I know you guys get so invested in these leaders that you just can't handle them betraying you, and that's why they constantly do this. They rope you in and then betray you like Brian Rue has recently done, just going so over the top, signaling against what they've talked about for years. And it confuses the hell. You've invested so much trust and respect in someone you've never even met. That all they are is an online personality. You know, I don't want any of you guys to trust me. Obviously, I am all for meeting in person, and I do that a lot because then you can see, you know, we're the real deal. Come spend a day with me if you think I'm really a Jewish agent. Like, you want to come to work with me? You want to freaking see how I have to work my ass off? You know, how we all have to work our ass, of us that aren't getting paid for this, you know? So, all right, let's get back to this. He asked if I'd be okay with sending my kids to church, but that was the extent of it. This was all before he became a fascist, whatever the heck he is now. When I was working at the news headquarters in the summer of 2012, that's when he started getting very strange political views. He showed me he had a blood and honor tattoo on his arm, and I thought nothing of it at the time because I really didn't do too much digging into white supremacy cults. Anyway, we talked every day on the phone when I was waiting for the bus. One day he invited me to go see David Duke speak at his white student union in the fall, and I thought that was incredibly bizarre and politely declined. That was the beginning of when I noticed unusual things happening. The next time we spoke, it was because I was in tears over something one of his former youth YWC activists said at work. Judaism is a satanic cult. And Matt went on a rant about how the Holocaust never happened. Needless to say, I was turned off. Okay, so she has now clarified. A lot of people are writing into me because they saw the article on Destroy Zionism saying Matt Heimbach and I used to date, which apparently is a way to try to defame him after the Nightline special came out. It's important to note I believe that while he was pursuing me, he had a girlfriend at the time, yet believed it was fine to go after me because it's not like I'm going to marry my girlfriend anyway. If you're going to decry degenerates, well, that's pretty degenerate. Well, yeah, I remember when Thou Who Shall Not Be Named went to go see him, and they were live streaming. We had my ladies hangout live stream going on, and they were both in the front seat, and he had his arm around her. Like, his wife is at home with their newborn baby, and he's riding in a car with this girl with his arm around her. I was like, wow. If my husband ever did that, I'd be like, get the hell away from me. Like, you're disgusting. Okay. All right. Let's see. When I met Matt Heimbach, he was a very mainstream conservative. He loved libertarianism, Ron Paul, and even was a huge supporter of Israel. In fact, in those photos going around on the internet of us, that was his Israeli... Or she just repeated herself. So he used to mock Stormfronters, KKK members, and neo-Nazis. He did not hold any of the views he holds now when I met him. My relationship with Matt Heimbach was completely terminated in August 2012. I have not maintained contact with him. I only know what is going on in his life from the news. So, Yay, that's great. Isn't that wonderful? Matt Heimbach is such an Aryan hero. You all should totally trust him. I'm not saying that people from the Trad Workers Party shouldn't come out to the AIPAC event, but when that fat Jew shows up, I just get bad vibes because he has this whole media presence that comes along with him. I don't like him representing Renegade or, you know, like, obviously I can't stop him from showing up, but it makes me sick that this fat piece of crap is saying that this was his idea. Not that we can't, you know, it wasn't my idea. It was Chris Dorsey's and he deserves credit, but it's like, I know Chris doesn't care about receiving credit because he's doing it for the right reasons. But, yeah, this guy is a piece of work. And yeah, I'm sure by now, I don't know when, you know, I'll have all these recordings ready for another wild card, but I'm sure by now you've realized that Brian Rowe's a Jew. He's gone completely nuts. I called him a kike in his comment section because after he was explaining away Trump having Jews around him, saying that it's from insurance, that's why I was like, oh my God, you're such a Jew. Like, I don't have time to watch all his videos. I had no idea how crazy he was to begin with. If I had really looked into him, I wouldn't have gone on his show because he makes us look crazy. I know you think all of you people think I do for looking at the flat earth, but this guy's nuts. He has like, he has a, a tick, a vocal tick, like, and he does that. I think it's probably a side effect of whatever medication he's on, because I know when I was forcibly medicated back when I was in that torture place, I had a tick, like a muscle tick. It wasn't a vocal tick, but I know that you know, people can't control that when they're on these medications, and people are all using this as, oh, he's bipolar and he's manic right now, so it's okay. And, you know, okay, basically to give you some context, I know I'm all over the place here, but he, after I called him a kike, he went on like a manic episode of releasing, I don't know, 10 videos in the span of one day. There might even be more now. And in one of those, he talks about how not neo-Nazis and National Socialists are his number one enemy. How I'm a big meanie for calling him a name. Yeah, and he apparently has no idea what kike means. Yeah, okay, dude. Yeah, so then he also called up this Hasidic Jewish-looking woman. I could tell because she had the Hasidic dress code on. You know, she had, like, her shirt up to her neck. And I don't have a problem with that. I wear a lot of shirts up to my neck, too, just because it's comfortable and warm for when it's sometimes cold here, like the 4 days out of the year. But I could tell that she was wearing a wig because I was surrounded by these people in Brooklyn. Like, I took the subway with them every day. All the women have the same hair because they shave their heads and wear a wig after they get married. It's part of their sick belief system because, you know, only their husband should be allowed to see their head or whatever, their real hair, their real head. Because I guess they shave it down. Like, I don't think that they would put a wig on top of their other hair, but maybe some do. So yes, he's calling her up saying that he loves her. He's done with his Asian waifu now and he wants to come visit her and she's so beautiful. And even the Jewess was like, this guy's crazy. So clearly these two have been friends for years because he didn't just call up some random Hasidic woman and, like, you know, confess his undying love to her. It's just not what happened. So they, you know, they've been friends for a long time, which tells me that Brian is a Jew. You don't just befriend Orthodox Jews. They operate outside of society. They don't associate with anybody that's not even Orthodox for the most part. So I have a feeling that Brian Rue is an Orthodox Jew, that picture of him dressed as an Orthodox Jew is not from him being an extra on the set of a movie, that he actually is probably an Orthodox Jew is, you know, going undercover to just take a piss on all of us. And a lot of you swallowed it up. I always had weird feelings about him, like suspicions, but I could never take the time to really dig into any of his stuff and pinpoint and say, aha, there we go. But I went on his show just because I thought, hey, well, you know, if I can get the message out there even more, let's go for it. If someone actually wants to allow me to say my piece, let me do it, because not a lot of people are calling out the alt-right and Donald Trump. So let me, you know, use this platform. But now I've emailed him and said, take those down. I don't want anything to do with you. I don't want to be associated with you. You make, excuse me, you make our views look absolutely foolish. So we'll see if he takes them down. But yeah, he also said in his show that he went down to the Luva Bitch or Lubavitch. Lubavitch. He went down to the Lubavitch Center and told them how much he loves Jews, and he wants to live around Jews now. He just loves Jews, and he hates everybody else. So, you know, that was another clue or sign for me that he's straight up a Jew, because you, if I were to just walk down to the Chabad Lubavitch Center right now, they'd be like, get the hell out of here, Shiksa, you're not registered. Or if I went to the synagogue, they wouldn't allow me in, because it's not like a Christian church where, oh, anybody can come in. Come on, guys, come rape our culture. Come on. Not that Christianity is culture, but all these pro-white Christians say, oh, Christianity's European. Yeah, okay, I guess that's why your churches are completely multicultural, but I digress. So, yeah, he wouldn't just be able to walk into a Chabad Lubavitch Center and be welcomed with open arms and stay there and chat for a couple hours or whatever he said. He's most likely registered there. So, again, no surprise. I'm just glad that I'm getting proven right over and over again, because I didn't call him out until a few days ago. And then now he goes and does this. So I'm like, thanks, vindication again. I was right. I was right, and I'll be proven right about some others that I'm not even going to voice right now, because everyone will probably, like, throw a fit, but those of you who I've been talking to in private know, and a lot of you don't want to believe it, and I get it, because it sucks. It sucks being betrayed over and over and over again, but that's why we can't trust so easily, you guys. Like I said before, don't trust me. Don't trust Kyle. Don't trust a damn word that comes out of our mouth. Yes, you can take it in, but go and fact check. Go and hold our feet to the fire and say, look, you were wrong about that. You said this and you did another thing, and I will gladly explain to you what needs to be explained. That's why a lot of people say, Sinead, why do you make these videos responding to the trolls? And I say, because it's really hard to get a good picture, an accurate and valid picture of what's going on from snippets on the internet. You know, I used to think things of people just based on the few little, you know, bits of information I got about them. And then when I dug deeper, I thought, holy crap, what is going on here? You know? So I like to explain things. I guess people are extremely gullible. Like that Giovanni guy actually believed that random mulatto baby was ours. I mean, people, you've got to be a little bit more critical in your thinking. Did you try reverse image searching the image? No. So anybody can put up a website and say, this person is that person's child, and you're just going to believe it right away? Come on, guys. You call yourself critical thinkers? You think you're a critical thinker, Giovanni? You think you're pro or Jew-wise? No, you're not, because you fell for their tricks again. And I don't even know why he's acting like he you know, wants to defend Renegade now. This guy has trolled me in my comment section for years, calling me a Jew, and he's retarded, so whatever. But yeah, just wanted to read that to you guys, because a lot of you are still thinking this guy's great, and, you know, whatever, that's it. I wanted to read to you guys a little bit about the cynics, okay? Where do we get the term cynical from? And what is it all about? So I'm going to read to you a little bit here about the cynics. Okay, so cynicism is a school of ancient Greek philosophy as practiced by the cynics. For the cynics, the purpose of life is to live in virtue, in agreement with nature. As reasoning creatures, people can gain happiness by rigorous training and by living in a way which is natural for themselves, rejecting all conventional desires for wealth, power, sex, and fame. Instead, they were to lead a simple life free from all possessions. The first philosopher to outline these themes was Antisthenes, who had been a pupil of Socrates in the late 5th century BC. He was followed by Dionysus of Sinope, who lived in a tub on the streets of Athens. Diogenes, I think it is, Diogenes took cynicism to its logical extremes and came to be seen as the archetypal cynic philosopher. He was followed by Crates of Thebes, who gave away a large fortune so he could live a life of cynic poverty in Athens. Cynicism spread with the rise of Imperial Rome in the first century. And cynics could be found begging and preaching throughout the cities of the empire. It finally disappeared in the late 5th century, although similar ascetic and rhetorical ideas appear in early Christianity. By the 19th century, emphasis on the negative aspects of cynic philosophy led to the modern understanding of cynicism to mean a disposition of disbelief and the sincerity of goodness of human motives and actions. So the origin of the Cynic name. The name Cynic derives from ancient Greek, meaning dog-like. Meaning dog, kion, comes from that, or sion. One explanation offered in ancient times for why the Cynics were called dogs was because the first Cynic, Antisthenes, taught in Sinosarges Gymnasium at Athens. The word Sinosarges means the place of the white dog. It seems certain, however, that the word dog was also thrown at the first Cynics as an insult for their shameless rejection of conventional manners and their decision to live on the streets. Diogenes, in particular, was referred to as the dog, a distinction he seemed to have reveled in, stating that other dogs bite their enemies, I bite my friends to save them. Later, Cynics also sought to turn the word to their advantage, as a later commenter explained. There are four reasons why the Cynics are so named. Firstly, because of the indifference of their way of life, for they make a cult of indifference and, like dogs, eat and make love in public, go barefoot and sleep in tubs and at crossroads. The second reason is that the dog is a shameless animal and they make a cult of shamelessness, not as being beneath modesty, but as superior to it. Okay. All right, none of this meant that a Cynic would retreat from society. Cynics were, in fact, to live in the full glare of the public's gaze and be quite indifferent in the face of many insults which might result from their unconventional behavior. The Cynics are said to have invented the idea of cosmopolitanism. When asked where he came from, Diogenes replied that he was a citizen of the world. Uh-oh. Super commie. I just think it's interesting. I mean, the beginning explanation of Cynics sounds pretty sweet, but not the, like, having sex on the street like a dog. You know, this was just a quote from somebody, so I often wonder, you know, is that true? Because we hear about, oh, the degenerate pagans that were, oh, they're so degenerate, and they were killing everybody and killing each other and humping each other, and yeah, I don't buy it. So I just wanted to read that little bit here. And maybe you got something out of it. Maybe you'll think next time you call someone cynical. Okay, so I just got out of a little awards ceremony for, like, these little, you know, little, like, Christian Boy Scouts thing. It's just really... No, this is not for my own child. I don't take my child to church. And this is why. It was so creepy. They were just singing their little songs, and then after one of their little leaders came up and said, you know, we're pouring into your children every day. And I thought, what? We're pouring into them. I guess that's what they all use in their church as, like, programming their brains with the Bible. I don't know. We're pouring into them. That just sounded really gross to me. Like, we're pouring into your children every day. Ew, don't pour into my child. Why do you need to pour anything into them? They have everything they pretty much need. They just need to discover it and be shown how to discover it themselves. That was just really creepy. I really hate going there, but it's for work. And it's only like 2 hours, so whatever. But it was funny, though. They were all like, everyone raise your hand, you know, in prayer. And you know how people kind of like put their hands up? I totally did a Sieg Heil. I did. I just left it up there like proud. And no one said anything, because, you know, I could justify it. But I was like, ha, I'm Sieg Heiling in church right now. This is sweet. No, I'm just kidding. But not really. Okay, so also, I was talking with Kyle today. I was thinking how cool it could be to have a women's march that actually wasn't, like, degenerate. A National Socialist Women's March. That would be so awesome. You know, anti-abortion and pro-motherhood and natural pregnancy, natural birth, you know, culture, pride, tradition. It'd be so cool. And then we were just kind of joking around, and I was like, well, you know what would be so freaking cool? If we had, like, an Olympics, it was, like, everybody against the Jews. You'd have the opening ceremony, and you'd have, like, each ethno-state, you know, marching, Sieg Heiling in their own little traditional dress. And then we'd have, the competitions would be, like, who can hold out the Sieg Heil arm the longest? You know, like, the longest record of Sieg Heiling. And then we could do, like, who can build the best makeshift chimney?
off of this building that doesn't connect to anything? Or who can do the best oy vey? I really hope that I place in that one because I've been practicing, as you all know. It's an art form, let me tell you. Oh, the Jew accent is just, it's an art form. But yeah, I just think that would be really funny. It'd be really funny. Little idea. Little parody, I don't know, you know. But yeah, we haven't even really been making our little sketch comedies with our green screen because my channel just gets taken down all the time. And those take a lot of work, even though they look really, like, crappy, because we don't have good equipment. But we did get lights. We finally got lights, so that helps, you know. But, oh, man, all that fancy schmancy equipment and all the HD cameras and all that, it ain't cheap, people. It ain't cheap. So, yeah, it's not too easy to just acquire all of that. But we make do with what we have, and we do a damn good job. really think about it. This network operates on a shoestring budget. It operates out of the office in our house. You know, like, we live this network. We live and breathe it 24/7. We wake up in the morning. Kyle has to put on the show. There's no sleeping in for us. There's no sleeping in, even if we could. Like, even when our son is sleeping over at his grandparents or something, there's no sleeping in for us because we have to be up to put on the show or, you know, to deal with, you know, to approve comments. I mean, we'll even do that stuff, you know, in the middle of the night sometimes, go and approve comments because people flip out if their comment isn't published right away and they assume that, I guess, we just never sleep. They might be in Australia or something or England and they're like, I'm awake right now. Why aren't you awake? It's kind of ridiculous. And every time we leave our house, the site gets DDoSed. it's like every time. Well, for more than, you know, a quick trip. It's like they time it like that all the time. It's quite silly. But yeah, I don't know if I ever told you guys the story of one of the many ridiculous stories of Kyle and I and our escapades together. So if I did, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'll make it short because it just reminded me of just like some of the kinds of people that screw with you over time. And Kyle and I had been, well, more Kyle than me, but I was, you know, I had been on Renegade a little bit. I did that show with Kyle about my experience at the troubled teen brainwashing center. And I was I was a regular listener, commenter. So I was definitely looking into this Jewish stuff. I had finally, it had all clicked for me. And Kyle and I were living together in New York City and in Queens. And we got invited to this champagne tasting from the guy at the liquor store who we're good friends. We'd come in to buy a bottle of wine, you know, a lot. And he was always really cool. And he was very into tasting different wines. And he had a wine club. So we got invited to the wine club. And we're there at the wine club dinner, champagne tasting thing. And it was, you know, it was fun. Everybody's having a good time. And then these two, like, weird Jews walk in. And automatically, Kyle and I know that they're Jews because they look like Jews. And one of them has this shirt on that says ISIS. And it was like something security sister, like security something. I don't know if it was a play on that Tintin show. I guess there was some ISIS thing in there. I can't really remember because Kyle's not here right now to remind me. But they started acting really freaking weird. And no one really seemed to know where these guys had come from. I mean, it was kind of like an open event. Anybody could really kind of show up from the neighborhood because this guy worked at the neighborhood liquor store and was like, hey, come to my apartment tonight at this time. And anybody, you know, and they were just acting real shady. And then there was this other Jew there who looked like, there's this one image of this Jew picture that says, you're an anti-Semite. And he's pointing with his big glasses. He has like red hair, curly Jew red hair, and he's ugly. I swear that's the guy that was at this party. He was such a prick for no reason. I remember I went into the kitchen to probably like have a piece of cheese or something. And he's like, or no, I ask him, you know, hey, do you ride a bike? Because I noticed that his, you know, his pant leg was rolled up on one side. He was like, yeah, what the, yeah, I ride a fucking bike. What do you think? What do you think this is 4. And I was like, holy shit, why is this guy being so rude? And then, it dawned on me later that he was a Jew. But I just think the funniest part of that night is that the Jews came in shortly around the time where Kyle was giving the whole entire wine club a seminar on, like, language. I was talking about how 6 million Jews were never killed. And all of a sudden, these guys just show up and we're acting very strange and we're, like, making fun of Kyle's presentation. And I just think it's so funny that, you know, if you give Kyle a few glasses of, well, champagne or booze or whatever, if you get Kyle a little boozed up, he will just put on, like, a whole seminar for a room of people. And it's just hilarious. So, yeah, we had some weird experiences with Jews there. And we also had a weird experience with Jews in Florida when we were still living in New York, because we had traveled down one of the Christmases when we were still living up there. We traveled down to Florida to be with some of my family. They were all meeting down here, and I obviously have family down here. So, on the way back, we got pulled over and they wanted us to go through the body scanners. And by then we both knew that was, you know, we didn't want to be irradiated. And we said, no, not going through the rape scan. So they had to basically feel us up. I had like some fat bull dyke feeling up my breasts and it was so disgusting. And then I put on my Facebook that night when we had gotten home, I said, you know, it's nothing like being a free American. Or no, I posted it was a Gadsden flag that said, don't molest me, instead of don't tread on me. And I said, you know, oh, it's so great to be a free American, free to be molested by a bull dyke. And then this random Jew, who I had never added on my friends list on Facebook, goes, that's what happens when you're so popular. And guys, this was before I had even, like, come out against Jews. I had just done, you know, a show on Renegade. Obviously, Kyle had been... They had known about Kyle for years before they knew about me. So, like, it was more Kyle was a target, and they knew that we were running the broadcasting network out of our apartment in New York, which was, you know, associated with me. So then I got basically put on the shit list. And I private messaged this person and be like, who the hell are you? And then I looked at where he works, and he worked at this place that was in the city that we had just been staying at in Florida. And I'm like, and he was clear, and he was clearly a Jew. So I don't know. I guess, like, through the Jew grapevine, this guy just wanted to, like, mess with us and said something like that. Because when I private messaged him, he was like, I don't even know who you are. I don't know how you ended up on my friends list. It was very, very strange. Oh, we've had a lot of weird, weird stuff happen. Had fires happen behind our backyard. We've had, like, weird phone calls. A lot of it really is just empty threats, and they're just trying to get you to shut up. And I know it does get a little too real sometimes, but you know what? You know what's the saddest part? It's that the times where it's actually gotten the realest, where I'm actually like, holy crap, these people are actually gonna do something to my family, it's been supposed pro-white people. So... that says a lot. Like, I've never actually had a Jew, to my knowledge, release my address. It was Joe Fascist Lemming. That I don't know if I covered that because I've been doing YouTube and I can't keep track of what I talked to you guys about and what I talked about on YouTube. But yes, Fascist Lemming released what he thought was my address and what he thought was my son's name to the world. All because I made fun of him for defending Kike Enoch. He then went on to make a video apologizing that he, you know, told everybody to go kill themselves for hating Mike Enoch for being a subversive Jew. So yes, because he was mad that I made fun of him for that and put a clip of him crying about it with some violin music to the back of it in the background. Since I did that, he tried to he tried to release my address, my son's name, and get something bad done to us. Yeah, and everyone thinks it's a joke now. Oh, we're going to call CPS on you. We're going to call CPS on you because they want me to scream like I did to Mikey, who, by the way, is in jail for incest. I don't know if I mentioned that. Yeah, these people are real winners, all of them. They're just great. So,
Yeah, I have no time for toxic people, and you cannot trust hardly anybody, but their actions will tell you who you can and cannot trust. Trust me. Trust me, I'm a lawyer! Okay, I'm done. All right, y'all, for this week's Nickel Report, we are going to be listening to TJ Sotomayor. He's going to tell us about some niggas that have been killing innocent white people that's just trying to sell their dirt bike, okay? So listen up. Here we go.
The story that was sent to me by someone on, this is on Twitter, I think it was. Yes, someone sent me this story on Twitter. His name is Mike Bryant. His Twitter handle is Opinions on Earth. That's at Opinions on Earth. And he said, man shot and killed during Craigslist meetup. Two teens charged. The person who sent me this is a white man. The white man sent it to me, called them two teens. I'm going to tell you it's two niggas, two black so-called youths, two young boys who were raised by a single black mother. Black mothers breed death and destruction upon America, and especially upon their own children. These boys are 16 and 17. 16 and 17. Now let me ask you, what does a normal 16 and 17 year old look like? Well, these grown black boys that you will see on the film, well, they kind of look like 21 year olds, 22 year olds. Now we can't help that we grow up quicker than other people. We can't help that we children of the cotton. We understand what it is. But you can't get mad at other races of people for not viewing them as children. They view them as adults. The two teens, Dontae Johnson, D-O-N-T-A-E. That's what a nigga bitch named one of her kids. The other kid's name, Ramontre Williams. Black women are fucking stupid. Who names their kid Ramontre? Let me spell it for you. R-A-M-O-N-T-R-A-E. 17 and 16. Both of them out robbing people. No father, just a bitch who procreates and gets paid for it. Let me stop right now, because this is more about the man who was murdered in front of his kid trying to sell a nigga a bike. Mistake number one. Roll it.
Release the hounds.
Right now at 5, a father killed in front of his own son during a Craigslist sale gone horribly wrong.
He told his dad, I told you not to do this.
With a teenager already behind bars, the Leeds police are still following to catch a second person.
Why would you devastate a family like this for a motorcycle?
Good evening, everyone. I'm Jameson Euler.
And I'm Wendy Ryan. Thanks for joining us. We have team coverage tonight on the search for that second suspect behind the murder of a dad right here from Holiday.
Yeah, Tampa police have already arrested this 16-year-old for killing that man, James Beck. Beck was trying to sell his son's dirt bike on Craigslist.
Our Carson Chambers live in Tampa with the woman who tried desperately to save Beck. Carson?
Right, and this is where the father and son actually pulled up their truck with the dirt bike in the back onto the street here in the Belmont Heights neighborhood, right off of East 24th Avenue. And actually, a neighbor said she came out here, she ran to help, and she found this child hunched over his dad trying to save his life.
Go down there, and I run down there, and I begin to help the little boy, you know, give his dad CPR.
This Belmont Heights mom says she tried desperately to help.
That it was a, you know, this little kid. He's on his knees trying to save his dad.
Oh, hell no. Y'all see this shit? Black women are that lost. Half of her hair is her natural hair. The other half is weave. Look at it. All of the naps and everything underneath and on the side, and the other half is straight black. And she's walking out of her house like this. Just look. I mean, just look.
He's on his knees trying to save his dad.
A 15-year-old victim kneeling over his father on a Tampa street, shot, police say, by a teenage suspect.
I was like, well, where did he get shot? And that's when he pulled up his shirt, and you can see he had two gunshot wounds to his neck.
44-year-old James Beck and his 15-year-old son put an ad on Craigslist to sell this dirt bike, according to Tampa police. Drove from Pasco County to Tampa's Belmont Heights with the bike in their pickup bed, right into what detectives are calling a robbery setup.
He told his dad, "I told you not to do this." And he just, you know, and it just touched me in a way that I, because I have kids, so it's just like, it was just very sad.
Of course his bitch has kids. A whole bunch of damn kids. No daddy, just kids. And then you had to hear that little boy say what a normal little person would say, the truth. The truth is, Dad, I don't want you to take this bike to them niggas. I see niggas on TV. I hear niggas in rap songs. I know what niggas do. But the white man was trying to be benevolent and show the world he ain't racist, so I can't just turn down this black guy because I'd look racist. Let me go sell this bike to this black guy. Dumbest decision of his life. And that's what his son was telling me.
Police arrested Ramontre Williams late last night. He's only 16 years old, and neighbors say other children witnessed the violence.
My little brother came, he was like, Maya, the guy, he did it right in front of me. Right in front of me.
Another black bitch, head full of somebody else. She got a head full of yarn. One of them wore a head full of cat's hair. The other one got a head full of yarn. Two out of two. You've seen two white chicks in the video and two black chicks. White chicks carry their own hair. The black chicks buy whatever the fuck is laying around. You see this shit? She has yarn in her hair and a mustache. And she's a kid, too. She's like 16 or some crap.
A senseless act, according to this mom, who watched Beck die right in front of his own son.
And then when we did give him, you know, the CPR, he took his last breath.
And Tampa police detectives say they found the dirt bike very close by to where they arrested Williams last night. They are still looking for a second suspect, but they say they have some very good leads. We're live in Tampa. I'm Carson Chambers, ABC Action News.
First off, let's give a shout out to the family of James Beck. James was a father and a husband trying to sell a bike. I'm going to put his link to his GoFundMe in the description box. As I look right now, it's at $13,000, and they were only asking for $10,000. He was the sole breadwinner of his family. Now, when shit like this happened, hell yes, I will donate to GoFundMe, and I'm going to make sure that I do it, and hopefully you guys do too. And let me start off by saying, black men, we got some of the ugliest choices of female, period. If they have to put all that stuff in their head just to look normal, and that woman's fingers is thick as sausages, and then you see the news reporter's fingers all small, them women are huge. What I'm going to do is break this down into three reports, because this bothered me greatly. Two teenagers, Dante Johnson and Ramontre Williams, have been arrested in this thing. And Mr. Williams has other charges, and I'm going to show these in a second. But I want to say this to the little boy, to the boy who had to witness his father be shot. If you don't grow up racist, I'd be surprised. If you don't grow up hating niggas, I'd be shocked. To the white liberals out there who refuse to cover these stories and point out that 13% of the population, you could break it down to actually about 5%, is creating more than 52% of the violent crimes, robberies, and murders in your United States of America. But what nobody's pointing out is that it's single black nobody but me. I'm pointing it out, of course. Truth of the matter is, and I'm going to continue to hammer this home, single black women are creating death, violence, and destruction in the black community and in the United States. Most, if not damn near all of these children are coming from single mothers. You heard the boy talk about how I'm going to do something about this. Again, I'm going to break this down into three parts, but I got to do something about what he said. He said, hell, I've been on my own since I was 16. You know how many black children I've heard say that they've been on their own since between the ages of 14 and 17, that they was out of the house? Why? Because mom wasn't trying to be a mom. She was just a bitch out fucking and got pregnant. And she'll have the kid. She won't love it. And then that child will grow up without love, without nurturing. And that's where you have all of this violence in the black community. So when people ask, why do I point to the black women? Because whoever raises the child is the one who produced the adult. Period. if black fathers were staying in their kids' lives and black women were leaving and the black children turn out to be dicks and the black children were leaving their houses at 14 and 15, then I'd blame the fathers. You blame who's there. The victims of the 9/11 attack, none of those women are going around now saying their kids ain't shit because their dad died. Anyway, let's get back to this crazy story. The truth of the matter is, right now what we're dealing with is a bunch of out-of-control niggly bears in the United States. They're out of control. Every neighborhood, every situation where you have a predominance, not even predominance, just a high percentage of blacks, you have a high percentage of crime. And if you have a high percentage of crime and nobody's going to call it out, what do? Jimmy Beck's whole family's gotta suffer for the fact that niggas wanted a bike. They shot a man in the neck twice over a fucking bike. Now, had this been a white man or some white children, white teens did this to a black male, it'd have been national news. It would have been a hate crime. It would have been, see, this is how hard it is for a black man living in the United States. But we don't see that. You don't see white teens going around and shooting black kids in the neck over Xboxes. You don't see white teens shooting black teens in the neck over tennis shoes. You don't see white teens shooting black people in the neck over purses. You don't see white teens breaking in black people's houses and holding them at gunpoint. You don't see white teens. Would you like for me to keep on going? You don't see it. And I'm a black man, but I'm not stupid. Why? Because when I walk out of my neighborhood, I ain't afraid of them white people. But when I see niggas, I'm afraid. When I go somewhere and it's a bunch of black teens with their pants sagging and 15-year-old niggas looking 50, yeah, I'm afraid. And we got a whole bunch of people in the United States right now that you can't say that. You can't speak your mind. Fuck speaking your mind. You can't say what the statistics show. You can't speak of a fact. This father is dead right now. Trying to sell a bike to a nigga when his son told him, don't do it, Dad. I don't trust niggas. Well, I can't be racist. Let's go sell it. Here's what I'm going to tell every one of you on Craigslist and wherever the fuck. Do not meet black people. Don't do it. I don't give a fuck if it's me trying to buy a gun from you off Craigslist. Don't do it. It's too risky. Why? Because you see too many stories of niggas not coming out with money, but coming to rob you. See, we look at white men as marks. You steal them. Steal from them. Nothing's going to happen. They too stupid. They dumb enough to come into the lion's den is how we view it. We know we're lions. We look at you as an idiot for walking in here. And white people, as you see from National Geographic, well, they think they can always tame the niggly bear. They can tame the grizzly bear. They can tame the lion. Well, this man and many other people have found themselves at the wrong end of a barrel to a nigga. And the family can't say anything about it. Can't be racist. Can't say fuck them niggas who are doing all this crime. Nope. But black people can say fuck them cops who kill less than 1% of blacks every year. Fuck them cops, but you can't fuck them niggas who are doing all this crime to all these white people. I just want y'all to think on that. Marinate on that for a minute. To the family of Mr. James Beck, Jimmy Beck, I know you're not going to be able to say what you want to say, so I'm going to say it for you. For the little boy, not every black person is like the ones you meet, but if you start to believe that they are, I don't blame you. Self-preservation, that's the name of the game. And when I see a red something on the stove, it may not be hot, but past experiences, what I've seen in life, makes me believe it is. You'd be a dumb white person right now if you just walk up in some black people and just think this is gonna go right. Because what's the most he would have gotten out of this? Sold a bike for a few hundred bucks. That's it. What did he lose? His life. Please, guys, go donate to this man as I'm going right now. Donate to his family. Even though they're over 10 grand, keep donating. We had a man who was a family man. He was taking care of his family and was probably raising some good boys. And guess what's going to happen? If they turn into the next Dylan Roof, would you be upset? Or would you do like how we do black kids and say, well, we got to find out what made him do that? Well, now we know what would make him do it if he did it. And guess what? I wouldn't have a nary negative thing to say about him. because no one should have to sit and watch their father get shot in the fucking neck over a motorcycle by some niggas or anyone. I'm Tommy Sotomayor. I'll be back with part two and part three. Fuck you and good night.
So I am going to do something here. I'm going to flip to a random page in this book called SS Culture, Volume 11, and it's on beauty. Okay, so here we go. All right. Blossoms and flowers, 150,000 kinds. Given such a plenty and diversity on such a small spot, does nature not exhaust itself? Must it not constantly repeat itself? Who has an idea how rich the world of plants is, how inexhaustible of blossoming plants, for example? There are 150,000 different species, not counting subspecies and varieties. Even a special gardener could not cultivate every variety of rose. There would be several hundred, and yet the basic form of the garden rose is only one species among 150,000 plants. I lie in the grass and my thoughts soon take me to the most beautiful flower mathematicians. My legs dangle in the air, 150,000 flowering plants, but that is not all by a long shot. In addition, are numerous ferns, moss, mushrooms, seaweed, algae, and bacteria. Whoever practices the study of algae already finds his life too short and would like to triple it. There are specialty researchers just for blue algae. And if a mushroom collector in forest and field wants to call himself a mushroom expert, all botanists smirk. Perhaps he knows the visible cap mushrooms, the tasty and the poisonous. But what other mushrooms hide under the earth, under bark and foliage? There are thousands. Earlier, they were indeed learned men, philosophers who held all knowledge and all sciences in their head. But soon the natural scientists separated from the philosophers. The division of the sciences proceeded swiftly. From natural researchers developed botanists, zoologists, geologists, and today even a botanist can no longer name all plant names. No life is sufficient just to read and collect everything that has been written and researched about plants. But what I do care about, dusty botany, when I lie in the grass and the flowers smile at me. A strange thought comes to me. Plants also have their feelings and their language. Why do they exist, actually? I think about that. What are the most precious feelings in the world? Enthusiasm, joy, and love. But have not the preachers for centuries beaten it into us that one must hide love in shame? Nature and intellect were supposed to be God's enemies. That is what the schoolmen of the Middle Ages taught. But what do plants say to that? What does nature think about that? What is natural? What is nature? What is natural? Love and the organs of love make flowers so beautiful and provide them with color and scents. They sparkle proud and unashamed in their blossoms. They do not want to hide themselves. They want to be visited, fertilized. For love, they clothe themselves in the most colorful beauty. Earth is no valley of woe, as has been taught to us. Life and earth are beautiful. God would not be God if he took pleasure in people becoming deformed in musty cells, castigating themselves and living unnaturally. Women were not created to cover their beautify. I guess that is a word. Beautify. Cover their beautify in black cloths to renounce creation and walk through summer joyless. That would be a sin against God's glorious world. The meadow teaches how one lives, pleasing to God in joys and beauty. There a colt happily jumps in the enclosure. Why do the crickets and grasshoppers chirk so clearly and incessantly? They, too, call from love. It is a martially joyous society in the meadow. Here a butterfly also flies over the forest of flowers. He nips at the honeycups and then flies on from inn to inn. The scent of the blossoms attracts him, for butterflies have sensitive noses which go far beyond what we understand by scenting and smelling. This inspect researcher, this ins, oh, the inspect researcher searched for years in an area for a rare butterfly. I think it meant insect researcher. I think that was a typo. Finally, he found it, the first and only one. It was a female. He took it home alive. There he imprisoned it in a small cage before the window. After a few hours, dozens of lovesick butterflies were buzzing around the rare species in the cage. The butterflies, which are so rare in the area, must have scented the female across kilometers. The scent of love and life joys sense across kilometers with our noses. We sense very little of it. My eyes, however, drink the radiant colors, the gorgeous plant structures of the meadow, and the music of the animals and the wind climb into my ears. I lie in the grass, happy and feel. Here lives the same eternal law over everything that is alive. In the flowers of the meadow, the animals, and also in me, the soldier. I think that's really beautiful. I really, yeah, these people knew what was up. They sure did. They sure did. Well, I was thinking here, since I pulled out a few books, I will turn to a random page in the Protocols of Zion, and I'm sure it has something to do with what the Jews are doing now. Probably because they told us all their plans in here. So we need only look at their own plans to see what they are doing. All right. Do 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 boop do do. Prodigal number 12. Masonic interpretation of the word freedom. Future of the press in the Masonic kingdom. Control of the press. Correspondence agencies. What is progress as understood by Masonry? More about the press. Masonic solidarity in the press of today, the arousing of public demands in the provinces, infallibility of the new regime. Okay, the word freedom, which can be interpreted in various ways, is defined by us as follows. Freedom is the right to do that which the law allows. Huh, tricky, huh? They're little tricksters with their words. You're free. You're free to do what we tell you to do. Okay. The interpretation of the word will at the proper time be of service to us because all freedom will thus be in our hands, since the laws will abolish or create only that which is desirable for us, according to the aforesaid program. We shall deal with the press in the following way. What is the part played by the press today? It serves to excite and inflame those passions which are needed for our purpose, or else it serves selfish ends of parties. It is often vapid, unjust, mendacious, and the majority of the public have not the slightest idea what ends the press really serves. We shall saddle and bridle it with a tight curb. We shall do the same also with all productions of the printing press, for where would be the sense of getting rid of the attacks of the press if we remain targets for pamphlets and books? The produce of publicity, which nowadays is a source of heavy expense owing to the necessity of censoring it, will be turned by us into a very lucrative source of income to our state. We shall lay on it a special stamp tax and require deposits of caution money before permitting the establishment of any organ of the press or of printing offices. These will then have to guarantee our government against any kind of attack on the part of the press. For any attempt to attack us, if such still be possible, we shall inflict fines without mercy. This is already happening. Such measures as stamp tax, deposits of caution money, and fines secured by these deposits will bring in a huge income to the government. It is true that party organs might not spare money for the sake of publicity, but these we shall shut up at the second attack upon us. No one shall with impunity lay a finger on the aureole of our government infallibility. The pretext for stopping any publication will be the alleged plea that is agitating the public mind without occasion or justification. I beg you to note that among those making attacks upon us will also be organs established by us, but they will attack exclusively points that we have predetermined to alter. So there's your alt-right. You know, there's your controlled opposition, kosher nationalism right there. Let's read that again, guys. The pretext for stopping any publication will be the alleged plea that it is agitating the public mind without occasion or justification. Fake news, right? I beg you to note that among those making attacks upon us will also be organs established by us. Oy vey. Hand rubbing intensifies. But they will attack exclusively points that we have predetermined to alter. It's all here. Everything is here. They tell you, and I think that's why people have the hardest time seeing it, because they think that it shouldn't be so obvious. It's like reverse psychology. The elephant, the Jew elephant, is in the room. He is huge. He smells. He is gross. And you're staring right at him, but you don't want to admit that he's there. Because why would the elephant be in my room? Why would it be so big? It couldn't have gotten this big without me noticing. I mean, I was here the whole time, and now this elephant's huge, but it's, you know, it was always here, right? No. Well, technically the Jew elephant in the room has always been there, but, you know, I digress. Not a single announcement will reach the public without our control. Even now, this is already attained by us, in as much as all news items are received by a few agencies in whose offices they are focused from all parts of the world. These agencies will then be already entirely ours and will give publicity only to what we dictate to them. If already now we have contrived to possess ourselves of the minds of the Goy communities to such an extent that they all come near looking upon the events of the world through the colored glasses of those spectacles we are setting astride their noses. Yep. If already now there is not a single state where there exists for us any barriers to admittance into what Goy stupidity calls state secrets, what will our position be then, when we shall be acknowledged supreme lords of the world in the person of our king of all the world? Let us turn again to the future of the printing press. Everyone desirous of being a publisher, librarian, or printer will be obliged to provide himself with a diploma instituted therefore, which, in case of any fault, will be immediately impounded. So here you have, you know, you have like boards, licensures, all that kind of stuff that you have to go through the, you know, you have to go through their channels to be able to do, you know, what you want to do. We turn to the periodical press. We shall impose on it, as on all printed matter, stamp taxes per sheet and deposits of caution money, and books of less than 30 sheets will pay double. We shall reckon them as pamphlets in order, on the second hand, to reduce the number of magazines, which are the worst form of printed poison, and on the other, in order that this measure may force writers into such lengthy productions that they will be the little red, especially as they will be costly. Okay, so I'm going to jump down here because this point is very, very important to our current situation. Well, I'm sure all of the things covered in here are, but this one is very interesting. Okay, so in the front rank, they're going to be basically going over their agents here, their cyanine operation, their, you know, their pyramid of control within organized and international Jewry. Okay, in the front rank will stand organs of an official character. They will always stand guard over our interests, and therefore their influence will be comparatively insignificant. In the second rank will be the semi-official organs, whose part it will be to attract the tepid and indifferent. The normies, right? We gotta get those guys going after the normies. Gotta get them on the Jew narrative. In the third rank, we shall set up our own, to all appearances, opposition, which in at least one of its organs will present what looks like the very antipodous to us. Our real opponents at heart will accept this simulated opposition as their own and will show us their cards. They have. I'm sure I have, too. I've fallen into their traps so many damn times. Freaking Jews. Poisonous mushroom. I'll read an excerpt from that book next. Okay. Because that's a very good book. And it should be read to like, young, like, I wouldn't say young kids, but, you know, I don't know. Children need to know how to avoid the Jew. It's dangerous. Like, white children are prey for them. They love killing white children in their little ritualistic Talmudic sacrifices and bloodletting. I mean, they, it's disgusting. Okay. I mean, okay, just real quick. Look at how some people, you know, especially Jews, look at animals, right? They slit their throats and they let them bleed out like a slow, torturous death. So that's how they view animals. They think that we are cattle. So what do you think they're doing to these little, you know, these little chickens, right? They call the little boys chicken, chicken lover, chickens. What do they do with the chickens with their sick sacrifice in on the streets of Brooklyn, which, by the way, they don't have to pull a permit for because they're Jews. They don't have to follow the laws. They even have their own police force, school system, and, you know, neighborhood with everything in Hebrew. Okay. All our newspapers will be of all possible complexions. Aristocratic, Republican, revolutionary, even anarchical. For so long, of course, as the Constitution exists. Well, I'd say it doesn't anymore. It might exist as a physical document, but is it being, you know, followed? Absolutely not. Okay. So, very interesting here, right? They're basically saying there will be a flavor for every kind of truth seeker, and we will be the ones providing it. So you have your flat earther people, right? Like, they're really drawn into the metaphysical and the planes and all this and hidden truths and all this. And then you'll offer them this narrative and that narrative. But no, it's all going to be controlled by them. They don't want you connecting all of the dots. And that's why Renegade is such a threat, because Renegade is a circle. You know, we have people on here that are real truth seekers and that don't care about looking stupid or having people like them or saying the right thing, because we care about the truth. So moving on here. Like the Indian idol Vishnu, they will have 100 hands, and every one of them will have a finger on any one of the public opinions as required. When a pulse quickens, these hands will lead opinion in the direction of our aims. For an excited patient loses all power of judgment and easily yields to suggestion. Kind of like the ellipse experiment, right, guys? Okay. Those fools who will think they are repeating the opposition of a newspaper of their own camp will be repeating our opinion, or any opinion that seems desirable for us. Yep. Perfect example of this is Milo. Oh my God, the riots. The riots over Milo, because he's so dangerous. He really is a dangerous faggot. Okay, guys, I mean, I don't even have to look. I just know that that was funded. I'm not saying that these Antifa, I don't know, was it Antifa or was it Dindus or was it both? Because I don't even have time to look into the fake news, which is most news that you get. Just consider it bullshit until proven otherwise. Oh, first swear of the show. I hope. I don't think I swore at all other times. But okay, that's my, I get that one. So, you know, yeah, this Milo thing, everyone's just freaking out. Oh my God, Antifa. Oh, they're just, oh, I just can't wait to get them, round them up in the helicopters and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, these people are scum, absolutely, but they are not really in control. They're not in control at all. They don't control Jack Crap. Just doesn't sound as good saying Jack Crap, but whatever. It just, it's not like a number one priority there, because who's funneling money to all these groups? Huh? Who's, well, the people that print the money, right? The Jews, they have unlimited access to money. They, you know, a lot of people say, well, it's all about money. Money is power. It's really not about money. It's about control of our minds. Control of our minds. And money is a very good way to be able to do that, you know? But really, money, I look at it more as currency, right? Currency, like electrical flow. Another name for money, currency. I think it's basically just a siphoning off of life energy, and it's just the currency, the paper money, represents that. Okay, so here we go. In the vain belief that they are following the organ of their party, they will in fact follow the flag which we hang out for them. Oh gosh, yeah, yeah, it's true. That's true. I know. In my past, I've picked up some flags. You know, carried the banner of some Jew created crap. You know, like We Are Change, the 9/11 Truth Movement. Bush knocked down the towers. Yeah, it was George Bush. Immortal Technique told me, yo, he's that communist rapper. He's the shit. Oh damn it, another swear. But I was pretending to be like nigga Sinead, so it's okay. I was in a different personality there, guys. Okay, back to our friends the Jews here. In order to direct our newspaper militia in this sense, we must take a special and minute care in organizing this matter. Under the title of Central Department of the Press, we shall institute literary gatherings in which our agents will, without attracting attention, issue the orders and watchwords of the day. By discussing and controverting, but always superficially, without touching the essence of the matter, our organs will carry on a sham fight, fusillade with the official newspapers, solely for the purpose of giving occasion for us to express ourselves more fully than could well be done from the outset in official announcements, whenever, of course, that is to our advantage. These attacks upon us will also serve another purpose, namely that our subjects will be convinced of the existence of full freedom of speech and so give our agents an occasion to affirm that all organs which oppose us are empty babblers, since they are incapable of finding any substantial objections to our orders. Methods of organization like these, imperceptible to the public eye, but absolutely sure, are the best calculated to succeed in bringing the attention and the confidence of the public to the side of our government. Thanks to such methods, we shall be in a position, as from time to time may be required, to excite or to tranquilize the public mind on political questions, to persuade or to confuse, printing now truth, now lies, facts or their contradictions. Okay, there's the ellipse again. Now truth, now lies, fed lies, right? Had a lot of truth in the beginning, right? It was like, bam, truth bomb, pshaw, truth blitzkrieg all over the place. We are pro-white. We don't care about our old, you know, Antifa-type fans. We're, like, going to stand our ground. I'm going to get a fashy haircut. You know, I'm going to wear a Thor's hammer. Okay. Yeah. Trial shots like these, fired by us in the third rank of our press in case of need, will be energetically refuted by us in our semi-official organs. Even nowadays, already to take only the French press, there are forms which reveal Masonic solidarity in acting on the watchword. All organs of the press are bound together by professional secrecy. Like the augurs of old, not one of their numbers will give away the secret of his sources of information, unless it be resolved to make announcement of them. Not one journalist will venture to betray this secret, for not one of them is ever admitted to practice literature unless his whole past has come disgraceful, sore, or other. These sores would be immediately revealed. So long as they remain the secret of a few, the prestige of the journalist attracts the majority of the country. The mob follow after him with enthusiasm. Very interesting. I'll read just a little bit more. When we are in the period of the new regime, transitional to that of our assumption of full sovereignty, we must not admit any revelations by the press of any form of public dishonesty. It is necessary that the new regime should be thought to have so perfectly contented everybody that even criminality has disappeared. Cases of the manifestation of criminality should remain known only to their victims and to chance witnesses, no more. Very, very telling. That was protocol number 12. Okay, so I know I said I would read a random part from The Poisonous Mushroom, and after that I'm going to read an excerpt from SS Culture, SS Woman, and then I think I should be at 2 hours, and I hope that you guys have enjoyed this. I kind of did this last minute because I assumed I would have an hour interview, but hopefully, you know, you've gotten something out of these readings, and they weren't too boring, and you were able to listen. So here we go. The Poisonous Mushroom. Okay. What Hans... Oh, you know what? I'm not going to read that because that's like a summary of the first story in the book. So I'll just go to this now. because that wouldn't make sense. You would have no context. The god of the Jews is money. Lieselotte sits with her mother at the window. Outside, it's already getting dark. Evening falls. The mother has set aside the knitting. Neither speaks a word. Reflectively, Lieselotte gazes out the window. "What are you thinking about?" asks the mother. "I was just thinking about father," answers the girl. "Why now about father?" asks the mother, surprised. Lieselotte pushes her blonde hair from her forehead, and then she speaks. "Mother, I often think how hard father must work for us every day. He goes to the factory very early. Only in the evenings does he return home again. And that goes on year after year. It's so hard to earn money." The mother sighs. "Yes, my child, you're right. But today it's different. Earlier, when father was unemployed, it was bad. For 3 years long, father had nothing to do. For 3 years long, he earned nothing. For 3 years long, we only received a small support. Father was desperate. He wanted to work so badly, but there was no work for him. We had to go hungry just so that we could buy milk for you. Lieselotte and millions of other people were unemployed as well. In the worker families, there was a great need that cannot be described. Yes, child, that was a terrible time, and I will never in my whole life forget that time. But today Adolf Hitler has again given us work and bread. Today it is a joy again to be able to work, for our folk, for our fatherland." Lieselotte laughs. "Mother, do you know what I have often wished for? I would like to be rich, very rich, and with my money I would like to make people happy. I would like to help the poor." The mother gives the daughter a friendly pat on the shoulder. "That's nice of you, Lieselotte, but believe me, money alone does not bring happiness. I know many people who, despite their wealth, are the poorest people. They are sick, sick from living well, sick from the good and plentiful food and drink, sick from laziness. They can no longer laugh because they are afraid, that someone might come and take away all their wealth again, afraid that they might become very poor again. Yes, my child, I envy nobody for his money, and I also know that we are more happy than many millionaires." Lieselotte nods, and then she says, "Tell me, mother, how is it that precisely the Jews have become so rich? Our teacher told us in school that there are today thousands of Jews in the world who are millionaires, but the Jews don't work at all. Only we non-Jews must work. The Jew only trades, but one can't become a millionaire through trade with rags, paper, bones, cloths, and furniture." "Oh, why not?" says the mother. "Precisely with such things, the Jews have already made great fortunes. They have swindled suffering non-Jews out of all their property for a few pennies, and then they have resold the things again for a huge profit. It is all the same to the Jews. If the swindled non-Jews starve, Jews know no pity. They only strive for one thing, for money. How they make this money makes no difference to them." Lieselotte had listened attentively, and again she asks, "Mother, why is it that the Jews can be so vile, so ruthless, and so unspeakably base?" The mother answers, "Child, you must note one thing. The Jew is not a person like us. The Jew is a devil, and a devil knows no honesty. A devil only knows baseness, only knows crime. Lieselotte, you have often read in the Bible, and there is a saying in the Bible that the Jew God once spoke to the Jew. It goes..." Oh man, this is so Christian. We need to rewrite this. We need to rewrite these books to be less Christian. "You should devour the folks of the earth. Do you know what that means? It means that the Jews should destroy all the folks of the earth. You should exploit and suck them dry until they finally die off. That is what this saying is supposed to mean." Lieselotte has become completely serious. She cannot yet fully grasp all that. And again the mother speaks. "Yes, my child, that is how the Jew is. The God of the Jews is money, and in order to steal money, he commits the greatest crimes. He does not rest until he can sit on a big sack of money. He does not rest until he has become king of money, and with his money he wants to make us slaves. He wants to destroy us. With his money, he wants to gain mastery over the whole world, and all that is stated by a saying with a few words. The Jew's purpose in this world strives only for one thing, money, 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 through lie and deceit and other things to make himself immeasurably rich. What does he care about disgrace, mockery, money, that is and remains his god? With money, he hopes to vanquish us, to achieve world mastery." So I think this is a good book for children. And obviously, you know, it doesn't seem to be too over-the-top Christian. I believe, you know, this was the time of positive Christianity, right? They were trying to kind of push their people along, like, get away from the Jewiness. Come on, let's do positive Christianity. Oh, pagan symbols, aren't they nice, you know? But no, pagans are degenerates that have sex on all fours. I love that. I laugh every time I hear that. Did you guys know that? I don't know if I mentioned that, but pagans have sex on all fours, according to Deplorable Princess. So, again, why that's a bad thing if you're having heterosexual sex, I don't understand why that is bad. But, you know, apparently it's degenerate and it's pagan. Missionary position. I guess that would be a Christian thing, wouldn't it be? So, let me get the... Okay, so I'm totally getting off track here, but... So, Deplorable Princess is arguing that the missionary position is the only way, I guess. And I guess that's... They came along and they civilized us disgusting pagans that were being degenerate. And they taught us the real way to have sex, you know? And thank you so much, Christians. I don't think we ever could have figured it out without you teaching us retarded pagans. Before, we were just like, we had fleas and we were like, ooga booga. And I was just like, my husband was pulling me by my hair and like beating me with a club. And everybody was having butt sex and everybody was like sacrificing children. Those were our ancestors that built the pyramids. They were freaking retarded. They're having sex on all fours there in Egypt, building the pyramids and stuff. You know those red-headed mummies and those blonde, blue-eyed mummies that they find in Egypt? They probably had sex on all fours, you guys, so I'm just saying. They should probably be thrown in the volcano. They're mummified bodies. Okay. Random page in the women's book, the SS women's book. Okay. Here we go. Aw. It's a poem, Young Mothers. With joys received, birthing in pain, worrying about the little child, with hoping hearts, you smile and wait and bear it well, and love prepares the home for the little child. The winter covers the world and it's snowing, but you, fulfilled one, are growing and maying. You measure by other time and listen, as spring already rustles in your blood. Now the fields melt and the birds waken, the messengers of spring, the seeds of the hedges. Up to the blossoming trees you look in reflection. There swings already the cradle in fragrant linen. Oh, mild summer wind, full of singing and laughing, now for the child to make his little bed. How beautiful is the mother, how dear is the child. Oh, happy father who wins both. Aww, how cute. I'll do one more because these are short and sweet. Okay. For wife and child. Serious are these years when our folk struggles for its right, but the mothers, Lord, worry, and women who keep the hearth warm wait for the men who stand watch. Comfort them, God, for their hearts beat with worry for their loved ones. Protect the children, too, for whom our smiling is intended and all the tenderness in our breast, and send your helpers to them. When the fathers are far away, they teach each other to think of the future day when, in place of the cries of the subjugated friendship, will reign on our continent and a neighborliness that protects the miners and guards them against death. When will the great peace come that you gave to the folks? So pray the women and listen to the battle noise out there before our borders. When will our fathers return home, ask the boys, and spy along the streets on all the pennants of the ships? When will we win our right to assume our office, inquire the men. You, Lord, know when the hour comes and still conceal it from us. We, however, join the women and children and reverently ask, protect the folks of Midgard and make them mighty and honorable. But since there are war and war cry without end out there, we also ask you, preserve peace, for we are strong in peace. If, however, you send us the struggle that confirms the hero, that sends us victory in enemy land, so that the women are not right with their worry, rather the children with their joy, and thus the rightness that you gave us will soon unfold again in arts and in the high pride of peace. And that's it for the readings today.